This episode of SolarWinds Tech Pod is brought to you by Orange Matter. Find it at orangematter.solarwinds.com. On this episode of Tech Talk, SolarWinds product marketing manager Ashley Bono.
How much can a data breach cost a company?
Speaks to SolarWinds Mail Assure product manager Dreas von Donseler.
I wish I could say email security is the only thing you need.
And Mail Assure product marketing manager Mia Thompson.
Email is the lifeblood of any business these days.
About the evolution and weaponization of email spam and the tools you can use to keep the bad actors out of your inbox.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Tech Talks. My name is Ashley Bono. If you do a Google search on email security, you'll find page after page, article after article about how email security is one of the biggest, if not the top concern facing businesses today. To talk about those various threats and about our solution for email security here at SolarWinds are our resident email security experts. I'd like to welcome Dreas von Donseler, the product manager for Mail Assure and former CTO of Spam Experts. I'd also like to welcome Mia Thompson. She is a product marketing manager for Mail Assure. You guys, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks. Great to be here today.
Yeah, thank you. Mia, thank you so much, too.
Thanks so much, Ashley.
So to get us started, I'd like to sort of level set and kind of talk about the different types of email security threats that different companies experience. So do you think you guys could just name some of the different threats and kind of explain what they are?
Yeah, absolutely. Email is interesting. We started filtering email about 13 years ago. And back then, Bill Gates actually predicted that email spam would stop. Within a few years.
Huh.
Well, I guess good for us it didn't. As a business, for the IT industry, of course, it's not good at all. But email remains an important tech factor. There's so much email in general that people are sending around. So it's easy for spammers to try and squeeze their stuff into there. And if you zoom in on different email types of spam or attack factors, like the classical spam is really bulk emailing. As trying to sell you products, the Viagra spam that everybody would know about. What they do is they send a few million of those emails, mm-hmm. and there will be a group of people that are insecure and happens not to be female in that group,
yeah.
that will actually order that product and pay for it, right? So by doing these huge numbers, these huge volumes of email, they will always hit somebody that is like, hey, I was just thinking about Viagra. Great, I can buy it now. Phishing is really more about a single line with a hook that's thrown out. The word phishing refers much more to trying to cheat somebody into an action. For example, pretending you're a bank and trying to have somebody enter their real bank credentials on your fake website. So spear phishing is a new form of spam. What happens is whilst the security products were getting better and more people were starting to use security, or at least basic anti-spam security products, it was getting effectively more and more expensive for spammers to get their customers to buy from them. And with spear phishing, it's a very, very targeted attack. Mm-hmm. So a malicious person, let's keep referring to it as a spammer, will look somebody specific up and try and really cheat that single person into a certain action. So it's very, very focused, very, very targeted, as if you take a spear and choose your fish to catch. Yeah.
So other names that I've seen sort of thrown out there are whaling or business email compromise, clone phishing, snowshoeing. There are all sorts of different things, whether it's pretending to be the CEO or using multiple domains and IP addresses. There's literally dozens, if not hundreds of ways spammers can wriggle their way into a company's private network and get to their files.
Yeah. No, it's interesting, like especially if you look at all these names, it's something we notice often as an email security company, mm-hmm. is there's a few email security vendors and everybody tries to name everything, especially if you're looking at the marketing department. So as a CTO, it's always interesting to hear all these different terminologies.
But for what's really the same thing, right?
Yeah, it is and it's not. So it's, I mean, if you look at email specifically, it's a very old protocol. And what I'm meaning with that is that the technology is quite outdated. The fact that it can be used for spam, nobody ever thought about. So there's millions of ways to abuse the protocol to try and get your message through and out to people. And all the things you just mentioned, the end goal for the spammer is to make money.
Right.
And there's different ways that they can do that. So selling the product is one thing, but what people should be much more concerned about is, of course, getting their infrastructure, getting their computers infected potentially and abused. Zooming further in on that specifically, it's just, I mean, these are criminals, right? So they're just trying to make money.
Right.
And making money can be done in many different ways. So what you see recently, for example, is with Bitcoin becoming mm-hmm. very, very popular, mm-hmm. is that they try and install a Bitcoin miner on your computer, which means that without you knowing, your computer is just mining Bitcoins. And that's annoying because it's taking up all your computer resources, mm-hmm. but it's not really the worst. Like, it really gets the right. worst if they start stealing your private email, if they start pretending to be your company for a phishing attack to another company, right. For example. Like with email, you can choose your own name that you send email from, mm-hmm. and you can choose your own email address that you send email from. And there's no real check. So if you set up your email client and you put in your name and email address, you can put there Bill Gates and Bill@Microsoft.com as far as I care, or you can put yeah. my name there. You send an email and the recipient may or may not receive it depending on their security product. And if they receive it, the only way for them to figure out it's not you is after they actually send you a response and they're suddenly getting a reply from someone else, or they're noticing that the email address that they're replying to is slightly different. So it's kind of incredible if you look at how few issues there are
yes.
related to security, if you look at how simple it is to abuse email to get through to computers and to trick people into taking action. Yeah.
Well, you know, I found a really interesting statistic. This is according to IBM, 95% of all security incidents involve human error. So you could argue that you could give all of the training you want, all of the seminars you want to your employees, but there's still a pretty decent chance that some spammer is going to just be really good at cloning somebody important and tricking an employee.
Yeah, and we definitely see a rise in that. So employees need to be super alert on a daily basis. So what we do internally as a company, we normally test employees frequently. Mm-hmm. So we have a guy in the office and he would send out a phishing email to his employees, a fake one, and test them just to make sure everyone is super alert and continuously educated on the problem. But yeah, there's definitely all sorts of ways for them to get in. And of course, that's why people have an additional layer of security. That's why they have email security.
Yeah, and I mean, it's good you bring that up, obviously. and I think that's where, on the one hand, it's very important that you have a security layer mm-hmm. at all. I mean, I would love, of course, for everybody to use our product, but right. you need to protect your email. That's not a choice anymore nowadays. But on the education part, what we see in our product is we would quarantine, for example, phishing attacks and malware attacks and spam attacks. But we actually, in the behavior of the user, see that they're trying to release those messages,
right.
believing that it's really from their bank, and we would have wrongly blocked it whilst it was an attack vector.
Mm-hmm.
And we have extra protection in place as well to try and show the users, like, wait, what you're doing here, that's maybe not what you want to do, because your bank is probably not located in Vietnam, for example. So there is the whole education part and the security part, and they do go hand in hand, because you can do as much on security as you want, but the human factor is yes. very important in basically bypassing all your technical security solutions. So there's really a mix of action that you need to protect yourself.
So tell me a little bit about MailAssure.
It's a cloud-based solution that provides threat protection for incoming and outgoing emails. We have in-house developed technology, updated with input from billions of emails per day, so it continuously updates our threats database. So the spam filtering solution acts as a protective layer through which all incoming and outgoing email is passed, ensuring protection against spam, viruses, malware, ransomware, IP blacklisting, and basically all email-borne threats.
Okay.
And then for long-term storage, we also have email archiving for regulatory and compliance reasons. So in a nutshell, that's what MailAssure is.
So before we recorded, you said something really interesting, that to be fully spam-free, you need technology and data. Could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah. So, to be fully spam-free, you need technology and data. It's basically black and white simplification. MailAssure's technology has been developed in-house and uses some of the most sophisticated malware detection, antivirus, and anti-spam technology. So why the in-house technology is important? It is relevant because in this way we can modify anything in our technology stack. So it gives us control over the technology. We can modify anything at any point in time. And we definitely cut out the risk of a black box situation. So where we don't have 100% control of what's happening. And I think Dreas can elaborate a bit more on the technology itself, because he's the man behind it.
Absolutely.
So maybe zooming back 13 years ago, when we started, we only had some technology that we developed. And we quickly learned that getting information about spam is very easy, because there's just so much around.
Yes.
And nobody cares about that information. But the real trick is not so much detecting the spam message, it's much more about detecting what's the legitimate message. Because even percentage-wise, there's less legitimate mail than there is spam or malware email. So building technology is quite easy, I would want to say, as an engineer. However, the data that you need to power those technologies to find out what's good and what's bad email, that's where it becomes a lot more challenging. So what we managed to do by analyzing all the traffic going through all our servers that we manage worldwide is to collect a lot of data on making sure we can identify who are the spammers and which mails are malicious and which ones are not. And that's really key on having a good security product. And if you look at the industry a bit broader, there's only a few companies that are really about building their own data and building their own technology. A lot of the companies license data and modules from each other, which is not necessarily a problem. But the big issue is that if there is a problem, if you do wrongly block something, or if there's a new threat, then you're of course depending on such a third party to supply that data. Whilst because we manage all the infrastructure and all the technology ourselves, we can instantaneously react if there is an actual new outbreak, for example, or make a correction if there's some legit email type of mail flow that looks like a recent outbreak, for example, or that looks like a recent spam run. And it's continuously changing. Spammers adopt their technologies, obviously, because the security vendors are getting better and better and better. So it's kind of a cat and mouse game every now and then, where the more data you have, the more powerful you become, because it's impossible pretty much for the spammer to hide, because if they send a spam run in Brazil, we would pick up on that from our Brazilian customer base. And therefore we cover the globe with, as you can call, kind of detection pods, as we could refer to our infrastructure. So when they try and abuse or cause abuse for one of our clients, we can use that data, use that information instantaneously, because our technology can pick up on that. So it's a very interesting dynamic between technology and data that you use to stay ahead of the spammer and make sure you can block them before they can cause abuse.
So it can be difficult to get meaningful data to empower the technology. What are the challenges to collecting the data?
So a lot of vendors would, for example, provide software only. We really provide a cloud-based solution, which means that we're speaking directly with those spammers. So we manage the infrastructure that is processing the email and that is communicating with the spammers. And in doing so, we can learn a lot more than what you can see, for example, if you just receive the message content, because we can see the speed at which they're talking to our servers. We can measure strange behavior, strange types of responses. And in the end, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get as many data points as possible. Also knowing that in the end, the spammer is probably trying to make money somehow. So they're trying to have you click a URL, so we can track the URL reputation. They may try and promote a phone number, so we could track the phone number if it's a malicious email. But the point being that because we have the direct interaction, if it's, for example, from a botnet, we know already that it's going to be 100% spam. We know there's never ever been a legit message from that IP, and hence we know we can get more data from that message to ensure that if it pops up somewhere else, we know it's probably part of that same network at that moment. And that's how you continuously reinforce the different filters, the different technologies, basically learning from each other. If you can pick up on an item, making sure that, hey, this is really a spam, so what else can I learn from it?
So what it sounds like when you talk about using all of these different means of collecting data to create multiple data points, it sounds like statistics is really the key to sort of monitoring changing dynamics.
Yeah, absolutely. It is really all about statistics in the end.
Yeah.
And having as many data points as possible on that. We continuously track the statistical performance of each of our classifier. And what we see is that sometimes, because the landscape changes in the way emo behaves, sometimes a classifier can perform slightly less a few years later, and we also statistically balance that out again.
Absolutely. So it can be really difficult for any company, big or small, to sort of get their head around where they're vulnerable and what their security package should look like, and assessing their security as a whole. Emily Mossberg of Deloitte, this is from csoonline.com. She says, an accurate picture of cyber attack impact has been lacking, and therefore companies aren't developing the risk postures that they need. It's not exactly something that companies are going to swap stories on. It's not exactly something that they're going to compare notes on. So the best companies can really do is add a layer of security, whatever that email security tool looks like.
Yeah. I wish I could say email security is the only thing you need. Email has been blamed or been taken into account in some of the recent outbreaks where email was really didn't play a role. So Everybody zooms in on email, which again is good, of course, for us. And I mean, there's no denying you need an email security product. If you don't, then within minutes you will be flooded with information you don't want to see. But it's very important to realize that email is not the only way that people can get through to your company. Mm-hmm. We already discussed shortly before on the human factor being a risk. Somebody can simply phone an employee in your company and try and pretend to be somebody to get right. data. Very similar to an email phishing attack, for example. There's many different attack factors, and email is like an open door.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that you need to protect it. But there's a lot more or less obvious ways that people can get in that you need to secure as well. So having endpoint security is very, very important as well, meaning that you have an antivirus on your computer and not to just rely on the email security that's in front of it, simply because there's other ways that people can get through to your computer.
Businesses rely on email to get their jobs done. But one click on a bad link in an email could bring down a network. Your customers and users depend on you to safeguard their email. MailAssure uses collective intelligence for inbound and outbound email security. And it offers 24/7 built-in continuity to help you keep your employees safe and productive. It's time to make email safe again. Find a link for more information in the show notes.
So it also sounds like it's really important for whatever spectrum of tools you use that you have visibility and control over your, in this case, email flow.
So security is scary, right? Because if you secure something, it means that big order you've been waiting for might also not come through because it's wrongly blocked, as an example.
Mm.
So whenever you start having automation to secure any of your doors, you want to make sure it works well. And I think that's where control becomes key. I fully understand that somebody is scared if they apply a security product and don't have clear visibility on what happens in that security layer. And what we try and do with MailAssure is to also provide that insight into what's happening. There's many different ways that we try and do that. Obviously, any connection that's made to our servers, we make accessible to our customers. We have everything designed in such a way that the data is also recorded specifically for the customer that they can access and retrieve that. But similarly, we can send daily reports or hourly reports, as people really shouldn't want that. But we do get that request quite a lot just because they don't initially trust the system and they want to get more comfortable over time by seeing that it's really blocking the right things and letting the good things through. So with any security product, it's very important that you have control. Also that you're able to overrule certain classifiers, so we have full flexibility in basically allowing the customer to overrule, as I would want to say, anything they like. So we try and recommend people not to overrule anything, because as soon as you try and disable some filter, it means that's another attack factor that you open for the spammer. But at the same time, I understand you want to have control, so that's all included in the product as well.
So Dreas, you were saying a few minutes ago that it's not just email, there's so many different ways criminals can try and hack your internal network and steal your or your company or your employees' information. So, Mia, can you talk to me a little bit about email continuity and archiving and the importance of both of those things and how Mail Assure helps give companies peace of mind?
Yeah, sure. So with Mail Assure, we have 24/7 built-in email continuity. So in this way, customers would benefit from uninterrupted business productivity. During such outages, as you just mentioned, email continuity allows users to actually log into the web interface. They can continue to read emails, receive emails, compose, and send. So they can continue with their business activities and focus on that. So that's just one part. That's the email continuity part. Then when we go over to email archiving, email archiving is obviously a backup. So we take a copy of every incoming and outgoing email message that's received. We encrypt it, we compress it, and then we store it in our cloud-based archive. And that obviously ensures that people always have a backup of their messages for e-discovery purposes, but then also for regulatory and compliance reasons.
For some of the folks that are listening, they may be from smaller companies, or they may be asking themselves, how much is security going to cost me? How much can a data breach cost a company?
That's a very good question. If you run a small business, and all your data is out there for anyone to see, it's quite easy for you to estimate what the impact will be on your business for that. And I think there's a few variations. So what happens a lot is with, for example, they would install malware on your computer. They would encrypt all your data, protect it with a password, and you only get it back if you pay a few Bitcoin to the anonymous spammer or hacker. To get access to your own data, and this is quite easy to protect against from an email perspective, because these viruses are not typically distributed via email, which means that our antivirus technology and then our anti-spam technology is actually really good at picking up on those threats. But if you look at the large recent outbreaks like WannaCry. Mm-hmm. That actually infected the computers, not via email as a lot of people think, but because of basically a bug in the Microsoft Windows environment allowing it to get in. It would encrypt all your data and you would lose access to your data. And paying a relatively small fee actually to get back access to that data is then very tempting. The nice thing of having backup, in our case email archiving, but the same applies to having a file backup, is that even though on your computers or your network infrastructure, they might have gotten access and encrypted all the data trying to get you to pay them money to release it again, it's held hostage, effectively. If you have proper backup in place, then there's no risk there really, because you can just restore your backup and you have all your data again. Obviously, you first want to figure out how they got it, but after you clean that up, you restore your data and you're back to operating your business without paying any of these criminals money. And it's even worse if the criminal disappears.
Yes.
And is maybe either taking your money or stops taking your money because he's rich enough to go away and you just cannot get access ever anymore to your data. If you look at the number of breaches that we do know about, it's a lot. If you think about the number of breaches that we don't know about, it's a lot more.
Yeah, absolutely.
And because for many years, everybody has been very secretive around their data breaches and they try to hide it. Now, that's getting increasingly more difficult. For one, because there's just all kinds of legal reporting now that companies are required to do. So it's more risky for them not to go that route.
Yeah.
And on the other side, there's just the fun of the hacker to make it public every now and then what they manage to accomplish. If you look at the number of passwords that have leaked from the different websites, it's huge. It's incredible. Almost everybody's password is leaked from some sort of website.
Somewhere, yeah.
It's good that security is becoming a bit more transparent, that it's okay to have been hacked as long as you explain what you've been doing to protect yourself. As long as you've made sure that you clarify what you've done to protect yourself against another incident like that, and if you make sure that you have a good security policy, etc. Because it's impossible to be 100% secured. You can get close by deploying good security. Right. You can never get 100%.
Well, and you touched on a couple other big costs there too. I mean, you have to notify your customers or employee of a breach. That's money. You have to invest in an investigation in order to figure out what went wrong so that you can create your list of improvements to tell your employees or customers or whoever's data was made vulnerable. If it gets even worse, there might be attorney fees or litigation fees. I mean, the costs of a breach can really add up.
Yeah, and security is really, really affordable. So if you compare that together, it's you also insure your car. I mean, like you need some protection, and the protection itself is not so expensive. But the consequences of not having protection are severe. Mm-hmm. But although I wish I could say that with email security you're there, that's not true. You really need this multi-layer of defense. You need to train your people. It's a whole group of solutions you need to work on. Just because you're too interesting of a target if you don't have that in order. So it should really just be part of regular business. And it has always been the case. It's just that it's getting more and more attention because more and more is getting into the public that was kind of secret before. There's a lot of costs associated with data breaches, although the direct costs are generally like any fines you may receive. And if you look at indirect costs, I think a big cost that people are often not seeing is that the data that is leaked is very valuable again for let's say spammers or malicious actors, because they can use a lot of that information, for example, pretending to be that person again because they have sensitive information on that person, to do another spear phishing attack, let's say on suppliers of that company. Data in general, of course, is very valuable. Mm-hmm. And once it's out, anybody has the data to use in their own way. There's the reputation effect, etc. And I think the scary part is not knowing who has your data and what they're doing with it. And that can trigger all kinds of long-term side effects there.
Another issue that I thought was a really interesting point that I think most companies might not think about when it comes to having an email breach is operational downtime. If you're investigating a breach and your computers are down, that means work isn't getting done, information isn't being exchanged appropriately or quickly.
And there's cities being hijacked every now and then. I think there's one recently, and that happens all the time as well, where all the governmental computers are locked down with a password, and they just have to pay a few Bitcoin to get their access again.
Right.
But what it really shows is it's easy for me to blame the security, of course. I don't think that's necessarily true. But as I said, you can never be 100% secure. You want to make sure you have that archive of your email messages, or you want to have a backup of your files to make sure you can always restore, even if after all security measures, something still goes wrong. It's really a professional industry. There is a lot of money being made every day from the spam. It's really professional organizations that are doing this, that are causing this.
Well, you know, you touch on something really interesting, because when I think of a spammer, I think of some guy sitting in his basement surrounded by monitors, just eager to watch the world burn. So it's actually a really important lesson for me to hear that it's almost like the mob. It's a professional organization whose entire purpose is to cheat people out of their money.
Yeah, and it's complicated because there's actually different roles in those organizations. If we're talking about the spammer, we're thinking that somebody is sending out these messages. But what's really happening is there is generally a store, like taking the classical spam example, there's like a Viagra store that is somewhat legit. What they're sending is just sugar pills, but it looks legit. They nicely package it. They actually send those products. It's not that you're not getting anything necessarily. Mm-hmm. They actually send those products. And they're just a small piece of the radar. Then there is somebody else that is collecting email addresses. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're hacking websites. We actually organized a symposium a couple of years ago where we had an ex-spammer. So we got quite some interesting insights from that. Yeah. And they would try and hack forums, for example, where they were dealing with specific fetishes. Because if you had that data, then you can send a very targeted attack to that group. So there would be a store owner somewhere there would be a person trying to breach websites, getting like personal information for targeted attacks, like a regular marketing campaign.
Oh my gosh.
There would be somebody hosting the website. There would be somebody else controlling the computers to send the messages. And so there's all these different roles. And then in the end, there is the one guy that brings them all together and facilitates the spam run. And everybody's earning a bit in that process. And that's why it's also hard to figure out who the spammer is, because that's right. It's not one person. There's all kinds of people involved and playing a small part in the overall picture.
Wow.
Yeah.
So when it comes to the difficulty in tracking down spammers, when it comes to the indirect and direct costs of a data breach, then the investment in email security doesn't seem that difficult.
Well, then Mailchimp is obviously much, an affordable solution. Mm-hmm. It's easy, it's simple, it's priced per mailbox. Customers aren't locked into like a long-term commitment or contracts, also not a huge predefined number of mailboxes. So in that regard, it's actually quite not such a big investment if you look at all the consequences.
The good thing about it being priced per mailbox is it sounds like a company of any size, whether they're a smaller MSP or larger and have upwards of 100 employees, it's a worthwhile investment.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, okay. And obviously, because it's cloud-based, you also cut out the costs of hardware. So you don't need any hardware. You don't need to install anything. It's super easy to implement. So
what are some other things that make MailAssure unique?
I would say one single important thing of MailAssure is the additional layer of security that we spoke about. Mm-hmm. As we all know, email is the lifeblood of any business these days. If it stops, your business stops, and it can lead to chaos. And that is what we're good at. MailAssure obviously provides best-in-class email security and encryption to protect emails against all these viruses, ransomware, malware, spam, IP blacklisting that we spoke about, but then also the 24/7 built-in email continuity. Email continues to flow, so users are never interrupted. People can always focus on their main business activities. I would say those are the two most important things. And then obviously our in-house developed technology. I think that sets us on a high bar compared to other competitors.
I think that our ambition has always been to really try and free the world of the spam, and not because we believe spam would stop, but by making sure that we can adjust fast enough to all the spammers and the problems around email security, mm-hmm. that we can respond fast enough to that it's not so interesting anymore. And actually the market is changing. Email is getting less and less interesting because of the good security solutions out there. But we set us apart by one, owning that technology so that we actually can control the entire process by owning the data. So if something is blocked, we know why and we can make a change. And we offer a global platform. So even if there's like outages somewhere in the world with networks, which happens, it means that by having the protection that you can still be reached and still can continue to use your email. So it's really the whole suite of everything together,
right,
that makes it very valuable.
Mia, Dreyas, thank you so much for coming today.
Thanks so much for having us, Ashley.
Thank you for having us. It was great being here.
And thank you to all of you for joining us today. This is Tech Talk signing off.
Thanks for visiting. We'll catch you on the next episode of Tech Talks. And remember, we want to hear what you think. You can subscribe, rate, and review SolarWinds TechPod wherever you listen to podcasts.